Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Clinical trials, they are a critical step in the development and advancement of medicine, but medical experts say problems with patient recruitment and enrollment are the primary causes for missing clinical trial timelines. They say successful recruitment of patients is one of the most challenging aspects in conducting randomized controlled trials, and inadequate patient retention during the conduct of the trial affects conclusive results. We will discuss clinical trials and look at some of the hurdles and what is being done by an organization to address the challenges. Joining us in the studio for more on the subject is Dana Donsife. She is founder and chairman of the board of Lazarex Cancer Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving patient access to cancer clinical trials. Ms. Donsife, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Lenore.
It's great to have you here. And also joining us via phone from Sacramento, Northern California, is Brittany Powell. Brittany was diagnosed with giant cell tumor at the age of 12, and she went through clinical trials, and she's doing much better. Brittany, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We really appreciate your time and look forward to the conversation. So let me start with you, Dana, if I may. I'll call you by your first name.
Yes, of course.
So you are the founder and chair of the board of Lazarex Cancer Foundation. Tell us, first of all, before we get into the challenges of conducting clinical trials, why was it important for you? Perhaps that would take us there. That, why was it important for you to start this foundation?
Well, it became a personal mission of mine as a result of a family situation with cancer. My youngest sister's husband, Mike, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer at the young age of 42. Mm. They had three young children. He was given 3 months to live. And, you know, about a 1% chance of survival. And I just said, well, Mike, if you do the same thing that everyone else has done, we're not going to get a different outcome. So let me look into clinical trials for you and see if we can take advantage of some medical breakthroughs in technology. So I went on to do that, and we did get Mike involved in a trial. Mike lived for 19 months. He responded well. And, you know, with young children, 19 months is a considerably longer time than 3 months. My goal was to keep Mike alive long enough for his little girl to remember him.
Oh, wow.
She was 4 when he was diagnosed and 6 when he passed, and he had some really good time with her. He was the coach of her t-ball team and took the kids skiing and, you know, things, memories that they really cherish. Mm-hmm. But during the course of that series of 19 months, Mike was engaged with other pancreatic cancer patients, and they were saying, Mike, we want to do what you're doing. You know, what are you doing? And he said, oh, just call my sister-in-law, Dana. She'll help you. Mm-hmm. And that's literally how Lazarex came to be. And I was just getting phone calls from strangers who were desperate to live and be connected to clinical trials, and I realized the gap that exists for advanced stage cancer patients when they failed all of the treatments that are currently available out there for them and who aren't ready to give up for their fight. Clinical trials give them that opportunity to stay engaged, and so that's why I started Lazarex, to help them do that.
It's incredible to me, because when I hear you say you thought of clinical trials, it means either you were already aware of the fact that that option was there, because a lot of people don't even think about it. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the clinical trials are there, perhaps to give another chance. So how did you even think about that?
Well, it was really, I stumbled into it, honestly.
Okay.
I was doing a lot of research, which is what happens with most people when they're diagnosed with cancer. They want to learn more about their disease.
Yes.
They, you know, want to find out the latest and greatest and what the best opportunities are. And when I was researching that for Mike, I started reading about other opportunities in clinical trials. And
okay.
That's kind of when the light bulb went off in my head, and I thought, you know, Mike can either go on chemotherapy and radiation and do the same thing that people have been doing for 40 years, mm-hmm. or we can take a look at the, you know, cutting edge of what's happening in medicine and maybe get a different outcome.
That's incredible. And your organization has touched the lives of many, one of them being Brittany. Brittany, again, thank you so much for joining us. You are a young woman full of life. But to think that at the age of 12, you were diagnosed with something so, you know, it sounds like it's very scary, very serious, giant cell tumor at the age of 12. Tell us about that moment where you were told that you have this disease that you, I'm sure, or maybe most likely you had no idea about what it was.
Yeah, so when I was around that age, I was into sports and I was heavily into school. I was in elementary going into middle school. And I didn't even think that my doctors misdiagnosed me and thought that I had a mild case of scoliosis or I was just playing too rough in my sports. I didn't even think that I would have something like cancer or that I could even get that. You hear about people having it, but I've never really experienced it with someone in my family before. So it was just something different. When I first got diagnosed, it was kind of like, wow, I'm not that invincible as I may seem, because I was at the peak and I was doing so well in sports around this time, and it kind of just shattered my dreams a little bit.
Okay.
And when I had figured out that I had it, it was because I started losing function in my right arm. And I use my right arm. I'm right-handed, so, like, it would just get numb, and then it would shoot up pain through my arm and in my back towards my upper spine. So that's how we first figured out that I had the giant cell tumor cancer.
So what happened next? What did your mom perhaps did? Did she know about Lazarex right away, or what happened?
Well, kind of just like Dana's story, when we had found the clinical trial, because I had been through 6 rounds of chemotherapy and surgery, mm-hmm. and so this was like our last resort, and she had searched what else could we be doing besides chemotherapy and the surgeries, and people pointed to this clinical trial down in Santa Monica, California, and when we got there, we were like, we couldn't afford to get back in there while maintaining a home and, you know, our family. So the doctor there and a lot of other people had recommended us to Dana. And my mom had called right away. And from there, we just grew. And they were like that neighbor that you don't really, you know, see, like that family member that just stepped in and kind of just helped and allowed us to get back to the place of where we were before I had the cancer.
And one of the
better.
One of the things that was so critical is the fact that you were given 6 months to live.
Yes.
Okay. And today you're here talking to us, and we are very, very happy to talk to you about this, your life story. But then it's also, Dana, this also goes to show that there is hope in clinical trials.
There is hope. There is a lot of hope in clinical trials. And, you know, when a cancer patient gets to the point like Brittany did, you know, her options were hospice.
Wow.
Or take advantage of medical breakthroughs and technology that are offered through clinical trials. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness her mother was very resourceful, as is Brittany. And she was able to make that happen and got in touch with us. And so we supported Brittany in her trial for several years. I want to say 3 or 4 years. And now she has different dreams. You know, now she's in college. And, I mean, we've literally watched Brittany grow up.
Wow.
And her little sister and her mom. And they're just a lovely family. And it is... a daily reminder mm-hmm. of what's possible. with clinical trials.
That's great. What a story. What an incredible story. In my introduction, I touched on the fact that there is not a lot of people are enrolled in mm-hmm. clinical trials. You were resourceful for your brother-in-law. Now, Brittany's mom was resourceful for her. But what are the main barriers that prevent people from really participating in clinical trials? What have you found?
So the number one barrier is knowledge. You know, a patient can't really consider participating in a clinical trial if they don't know about it.
Yeah.
And only 6% of doctors actually talk to their patients about clinical trials. So most patients don't even know that clinical trials exist. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and perhaps, you know, we could talk about that on another show sometime.
Okay.
But
because that's a big question that I was going to ask.
So that's the number one reason. But the second reason, and Brittany alluded to this, was that, you know, the clinical trial was not in her backyard. They lived in Sacramento, which is in Northern California. The clinical trial was in Southern California. It meant that she and her mom mm-hmm. had to get on a plane, fly down to Southern California, stay down there.
Wow.
You know, it was a very expensive thing to do at a time when they really could not afford it. I mean, Brittany's mom, Marilyn, was doing everything she possibly could to keep her family together, to keep food on the table, and to keep them going. And this was just the last thing, you know, that they could do. They just didn't have the resources. And so putting people in a situation and covering those out-of-pocket expenses is really important.
Yes.
To allow them to make a choice about what's best for their health and not, you know, how much money they have in their bank account at the time. And also, when you look at, for Brittany, she could not have gone down to that trial without her mom.
Yes.
Patients need a travel companion. Mm-hmm. Brittany actually, Brittany, I don't think you could even walk when you got down to that clinical trial. So she physically needed her mom there, and many patients do. So then we look at the language and cultural and socioeconomic barriers that exist, historical barriers that exist. So these are all things that we have to deal with. But number one is getting people to understand that clinical trials are a resource. And number two is getting them where they need to be when they need to be there.
Yes. And Brittany, for you, when you look back at your experience, I know it. Of course, it must have been a very difficult time on so many aspects. But tell us about what was more difficult for you to deal with. Was it the treatment, the diagnosis? Just tell us. I want to hear that from you on that.
I think the most difficult part about my whole journey would have to be the redundantness of my cancer coming back. It didn't come back just once. It came back twice.
Mm.
And by that time, we had kind of explored all of our options that the doctors were telling us, which was surgery, going from the front and the back of my spine. And on top of that, invasive chemotherapy that was already, you know, weakening my chances to survive.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the clinical trial was like a walk in the park. It was nothing like chemotherapy. It was just a quick antibody shot, and it worked better than chemotherapy. So I'm really thankful and blessed for Dana and my mom for that support system, because without them, I don't know where I would be right now.
So she said something that I find really surprising. The clinical trial was a walk in the park, to use that term. So what does this mean? Does it mean that the type of treatment she went through is perhaps the better approach for the type of sickness she has? And is that clinical trial over? Is the treatment on the market? I mean, what happens with clinical trials?
So in fact, to answer your last question first, Brittany's clinical trial drug has been approved, and it is available on the market.
Okay.
And it's thanks to patients who are courageous like Brittany, who are willing to be on the front line, if you will, of science and being willing to participate in a clinical trial. So we now have that in our, that drug is now in the arsenal for the next patient like Brittany who gets diagnosed. But clinical trials really cover a myriad of different scientific approaches. Some, fortunately, like Brittany's, are very low on the side effects. Some do have side effects. It just depends on the type of trial. There are five or six main categories now of various clinical trials. You'll hear about gene therapy, immunotherapy, CAR T therapy, targeted therapies. These are all the, some names that are floating out there from a scientific perspective. Mm-hmm. But some have more side effects than others. The goal, though, is to always come up with a drug that is more effective with less side effects than what's currently out there.
Yes, because side effect is one aspect of the treatment that perhaps people don't talk about. People that are not necessarily involved in the cancer treatment, they don't talk about the side effect, but some patients really suffer through side effects.
Well, sadly, side effects are part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to come out on the other side and have the opportunity to live, sadly, you have to go through the trenches and take the bad with the good.
Yes.
But the goal in clinical trials is to minimize the bad and maximize the good.
Absolutely. Okay, Brittany and Dana, thank you so much. We will continue the discussion. We just have to take a short break for the news, and we will have more on this very, very interesting discussion. So stick around. It's now time for a break and the news with Imutinyan Ijawi.
A new study published in the journal The Lancet Oncology found that young breast cancer patients with faulty BRCA genes have the same survival chances as those without. The researcher looked at almost 3,000 women and found outcomes were the same whatever kind of treatment women had, including mastectomy. Experts say it means women can take time to decide if the radical surgery is right for them. These are offered to women with faulty genes to cut their risk of developing cancer. Mutilation in the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 genes increase a woman's risk of breast cancer by 4 to 8-fold and can explain why some families have lots of relative diagnosis with breast cancer. In another study, researchers are raising concern that some children infected with HIV are dying early in hospitals in spite of antiretrovirus therapy, ARC, being available. They say one reason is delayed diagnosis among the pool of patients for the problem. The findings published recently in the Lancet Health Journal reveal that ART has not helped increase chances of survival for hospitalized children. Researchers observe that HIV infected in most is only known when they are admitted to the hospital, an indication that there has been little or no focus for routine check for status among children. The journal states that many HIV-infected children in sub-Saharan Africa are frequently diagnosed during hospitalization for an acute cold-infected infection and experience high early mortality. Almost a quarter of children died in the first 3 months of being hospitalized. A new study conducted in the United States suggested that singing could help mother recover from postnatal depression more quickly. The study, published in the British Journal of Psychiatric, looked at 134 mothers with postnatal depression. During the singing workshop, mothers learned lullabies and songs from around the world with their babies. They also create new songs together about motherhood. Those with moderate to severe symptoms of postnatal depression reported a much faster improvement than mothers in usual care and playgroup. All the groups improved over 10 weeks, but in the first 6 weeks, the singing group had almost reported an average of 35% decrease in depressive symptoms. And that is a wrap up for our news for this hour. Lono, back to you.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is clinical trials. Joining us in the studio is Dana Dorsaif, a founder and chairman of the board of Lazarex Cancer Foundation. Also joining us via phone from Sacramento, California is Brittany Powell. And Brittany is a cancer survivor. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us today. So back to you, Brittany. So you went through the clinical trials, and how much time did it take for you to start feeling better, to start noticing that the treatment was working for you?
I would say about a couple of months.
Okay.
That it took for me to start feeling better.
Okay. That's great. Now, Dana, one of the issues that we hear about is the fact that participation in clinical trials, particularly among women and minorities, has been lagging for years. So how is can you react to that, and also how your foundation is trying to help in this regard?
Sure. So clinical trial participation has really been a historical issue in relation to getting new treatments and cures to market. Mm-hmm. Only 5% of patients, eligible patients who could participate in trials, actually do. And it's for all the reasons we talked about before. Either they don't know about it, they can't afford it, there are language barriers, culture barriers, whatever that the case may be.
Okay.
So then you take that small percentage of people who do participate in trials. I mean, when you dissect, the various people who are participating, actually only less than 5% of those participants are from all minority communities combined.
Wow.
So that's, Hispanic, Asian, African American, Pacific Islander,
that's incredible.
A travesty.
Yeah.
It's really an inequity, right?
Wow.
And it's really important for us to make sure that the participation in clinical trials actually mirrors our population, because we need to be developing drugs for everyone across the board, right? If you look at a situation, like let's look at high blood pressure medicines, right? There are, 15, 20 different blood pressure medicines out there. Mm-hmm. The reason there are so many of them is because not everyone responds the same way to a drug. It's the same case for cancer drugs. So if we want to develop drugs for everyone, we have to have everyone participating in the trial so we can see what works and for who it works for.
That is such a good point you're making. Mm-hmm. Now, there is one thing with clinical trial. There is the uncertainty factor. And Brittany said that after 2 months, she started to see a difference with her health. But when you think about the fact that it's really, you don't know what the outcome may be. So how difficult it is knowing that a clinical trial may not always help a patient, mm-hmm. if you refer a patient to participate in a trial?
Well, I think after I answer this question, you might want to pose it to Brittany, because she was she was in that situation, right?
But, okay.
You know, what happens with cancer patients is if they failed everything that's available to them and nothing is working, mm-hmm. they don't have any other choice. You know, they're looking at, okay, either I try this, whether it works or not, or I die. I mean, that's sadly what it boils down to. Yeah. And thank goodness for Brittany's situation, they chose to fight and hang in there and find a way. And, you know, we're blessed to have Brittany here with us today. So there are, you know, when a drug gets into clinical trials, it's because there are indicators in the lab, in preclinical studies, that this is a good drug, it's viable, they're seeing activity, and it's worthy of then going to the next step, which is testing it on humans. And our FDA is the vehicle that we use to get drugs to market safely.
Yes.
Right? And so they start out with very, very, very small doses, see if there are any side effects. Go a little bit higher, see if there are any side effects. And they keep repeating that until you get to a dose level where you're actually seeing activity and response.
Okay.
And that's when they stop, and then they'll move into the next phase of clinical trials. So, so you know, there's no guarantee that it will or will not work, but the approach is to try and minimize any adverse effect through the process that has been developed.
Okay. And Brittany, let me have your reaction. When you were going into the trials, were you really concerned about the uncertainty? Is it going to work? Am I going to see some disappointments?
Yes, I was, because my clinical trial, what was good about my clinical trial is that it had an 80% chance of working.
Oh, great.
So we had kind of the advantage here. So it was more like, my mom was concerned and I was concerned, like, I could have been that 20%. Mm-hmm. And if so, where would we go from there? But I think we were so focused on, I'm praying and wishing it will work, that I don't think we really crossed out, like, if it would. But if it wouldn't have worked out, we probably would have searched a little bit longer until we could.
Okay.
But like I said,
As Dana said, it's a blessing to have you with us. And Dana, what would you like to see change before we wrap? What would you like to see change that could get more people involved in clinical trials?
Equitable access. Mm-hmm. We need to, and Lazarex is laser focused on creating a platform of equitable access so that every cancer patient, regardless of their socioeconomic standing, their race, their ethnicity, will be able to have access to medical breakthroughs in technology.
And thank you. Brittany, what would you like to see moving forward, whether it's as a patient or for your personal life, or even for looking at the medical field in cancer treatment and clinical trials? What are your hopes?
I'm hoping to see more involvement in people like researching these clinical trials and getting involved in thing that there's not just one way of how to cure cancer, because when I came into my clinical trial, there wasn't a lot of kids doing it, the clinical trial, so they didn't really know how it was going to react. So I would like to see, like, a total involvement against the spectrum. And when I did go in, the youngest child I did see, he was 4, and he had a very severe case of kind of just as bad as mine.
Okay, Brittany Powell, thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dana Dosarif, it was a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you, Lenore. Thank you, Brittany.
And
we
thank our guests, Dana Dosarif with Lazarus Cancer Foundation and Brittany Powell. And we thank you, our listeners, for joining us today, and keep the conversation going on facebook.com/healthchat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Ayan Bior. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these.